This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of The Golf Show. Glad you found us this morning. Plenty to talk about, as there usually is, but there was some interesting stuff going on last week. You, of course, watched at least some of the U.S. Open and saw how Bryson DeChambeau bombed his way to a title. And, you know, high marks for him. He was able to disprove, you know, one of those long-held theories that if you're a bomber, that's the way the game is now. It's set up for the players that way. Sure, they try to penalize them with the high rough, but, you know, and I understand that. And for the most part, that's a big penalty, getting into that rough. But guys like DeChambeau, and there aren't very many like that, who can get down there and are strong enough to muscle the ball out, rough is not that big an impediment. Does this change golf going forward? I don't know. We'll see. I don't completely buy DeChambeau's philosophies of the one-length clubs and you know, all the scientific stuff that he does. But, hey, he's won on the PGA Tour, and he's won a major, so what do I know? It was interesting, I thought, to see the distances that DeChambeau was hitting the ball off the tee. He was taking dog legs and just blowing the ball over them. And it made me think, in conjunction with the September 25th, that I wondered what Arnold Palmer would have thought had he seen the distances that this guy can hit the ball. And he's not the only one, but he, you know, he's kind of the high standard of all that at this point. You know, of course, Palmer and Jack Nicklaus were very much proponents of bringing the ball back, rolling it back, saying that it was gone too far. And there's, you know, there's some evidence that maybe that's true. But there's no big hurry, I don't think, on the part of the USGA to be putting that kind of restrictions on. I mentioned September 25th because that was the day 4 years ago that Arnold Palmer passed away. That's still a significant day in the golf world because he left, you know, obviously a great void in the game that he loved so much. I remember where I was when I heard the news. Do you? I was working on a project. It was a Sunday afternoon, and I think I had watched the Steelers play, maybe. I can't remember. I watched a football game, and then I went downstairs to my office area and started working on another project that I had. And when the phone call came, well, that changed everything, because I had to put together a couple stories. I had to do some interviews, and it was that was a very difficult one and a very difficult next several hours, and I didn't get those stories completed until I think it was 3 a.m. when I sent the last one. But anyway, certainly remembered that day as I was watching the Open last Sunday. In a somewhat related subject, you know, we have talked in the past, and it comes every year, the Palmer Cup is contested at La Trobe Country Club. Excuse me. It's the annual competition between the Tri-State Pros and the West Penn Amateurs. And it's been, you know, there's been streaks on both sides. The way it falls in the season, and it was not affected this year by the COVID concerns, but you don't always get the best players from both sides. But they're out there battling, and this year the West Penn youngsters were taken out behind the woodshed by the Tri-State PGA. They played very well and put up a, you know, pretty much resounding victory over the youngsters. It's just so happened that one time many years ago, I don't remember how long it was, but it was long enough that Arnold was still playing in the event. His right-hand man, Doc Giffen, and I hooked up by chance. I was on a cart, and Doc came over from the office and said, "Are you going to go out and watch for a while?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "You mind if I come along?" I said, "Not at all." So we went out and watched, and we watched primarily Arnold because he was coming toward the end of his playing career. But Doc enjoyed going out and watching him, and certainly I did too. And that's continued pretty much every year since then. I think we've missed a couple for a variety of reasons. But for the most part, that's what we do. Doc comes over about noon. We chit-chat a little bit, and then we get on the cart and go out and watch golf for 3 hours in the afternoon. Well, it happened again this year, and it was a great time, as always. Hearing Doc tell stories and bouncing questions off of him. But the most remarkable thing about this year's event was what happened between the players and Doc. I don't remember a foursome that didn't do this, but if there was one, like I said, I don't remember. Nearly every foursome, when they saw us roll up in the cart, if they were on the tee, if they were on the green, wherever it was, once they had completed that hole or played their tee shot, all four of the guys came over and said hello to Doc. If Doc didn't know who they were, if they were one of the youngsters, they introduced themselves. They thank Doc and Arnold for what they have done for golf and for this event, which is a big deal for players that get on there. You know, he got handshakes, fist bumps, thank yous from the players. It was just really a great show of the respect from the player's standpoint. You know, rightfully so. You know, Doc is 91 years old. He is the patriarch of the Palmer legacies, keeper of the records, that sort of thing. But not only were the players happy about that, the opportunity to say hello to Doc, that was a big boost for Doc as well. He saw some old friends. He was introduced to new people, but he put a smile on his face. Doc is a good man, and he has meant a lot to the game. Maybe not directly, but through his efforts with Arnold, and where that all has taken him across the world is pretty significant in my mind. So that was one of those heartwarming things. I was just kind of sitting over there in the driver's seat, just kind of laughing and smiling because of the scene that was unfolding just every time we stopped. So thanks to all the guys who did that. Goodwill all around on that that Thursday afternoon. A couple other things. I don't know if you saw, but Mike Davis is stepping down as the first CEO of the USGA. He succeeded David Fay in 2011 to become the seventh executive director. In 2016, he was named the CEO, and he became the most powerful man in the organization. When he came on, he was tasked with the idea of getting the U.S. Open set up correctly. There had been several mistakes made by his predecessors and the golf courses, golfers, they all suffered as a result of those mistakes. And the weather, once again, befuddled the USGA on a couple of occasions under Mike, but for the most part, he did a good job, and it'll be interesting to see who his successor is and what kind of philosophy his successor has, because when you bring a new guy in like this, he's going to put his own stamp on things as much as he can in an organization like the USGA. So that will be a change. Mike is going to go on until the end of the 2021 season, which is next year. Who knows what that season might look like, but he will be here for the end of that, and hopefully next year's Open will turn out to be a good one and a nice send-off for Mike as he goes into retirement. And we had another local winner. We've had a heck of a season, and we'll talk about that in another couple weeks. The Tri-State and the West Penn Golf Association will be finished, and we'll talk about the seasons that they've had. I think they've been outstanding. And the latest winner on that list is Brett Young, who 2 weeks ago won the West Penn Mid-Am at Longview. And then this past week, he won the state Mid-Am. Brett is 27 years old. He belongs at Nemacolin Country Club. And maybe I'm overstating this, but he's a guy who definitely seems to be coming into his own as a player. I know he told me earlier this year that he is thinking, pondering the idea of trying to go out and get a spot on the PGA Tour, but he's not totally convinced that that's what he wants to do. But he's becoming, an elite player, and he certainly had an elite season, and I'm not sure what his schedule is, but He said after the win last week, it was an absolute grind. This place is so challenging. I've been in the mix a lot this summer, so I've had experience being near the top of the leaderboard. So I think that helped me down the stretch. I'm just honored to have been fortunate enough to get it done today. He is in a group of very talented mid-amateurs, and that's the group between 25 and 50. And he's one of those guys who can hit it a mile, and it's going to be very fun to watch where golf takes him and he takes golf, you know, with whatever's left for the rest of the year and into the 2020 season, or 2021 season, I mean. PGA Tour golf returned to action this week, and this is kind of the week after a grueling U.S. Open. This week, a collection of pros are playing in the Corrales Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship. It's in the Dominican Republic. Hudson Swafford, another one of those University of Georgia guys, I believe, got stung by a hornet in his round and went on to shoot 67, and he's in the lead by two shots over Sean O'Hare. There's a guy you haven't heard from in a long time. He was out there. He suffered through a bunch of personal trauma, but he's back out there and now tied with Luke List and Justin Suh at 10 under par. And Adam Long and Mark Hughes and Xingzheng Zhang all are at 9 under. Nice looking course right along the ocean, but this is a field that's a little short on star power, which is, you know, makes sense considering that most of those guys came through the U.S. Open last week. So that's pretty much what's going on from my perspective. Oh, by the way, Brett Young shot 70-69 to finish one under in the state mid-am. This was to be the week, and we were to be talking today about getting ready to have the second day of the Ryder Cup at Whistling Straits. Well, as you know, there is no Ryder Cup this year because of the pandemic. Plans are to have it next year around this same time. And after we take a break, we're going to talk to my friend Gary D'Amato from Wisconsin, who is all about the Ryder Cup, especially this year. And we're going to talk about the Ryder Cup that wasn't. And we're going to do that right after we come back from this break. You're listening to The Golf Show on Sports Radio, 93.7 The Fan.